Harlequin Audio is proud to bring you A Million Little Things by Susan Mallory. Performed by Tanya Eby. Chapter 1. My name is Zoe Saldivar, and I just had stupid sex with my ex-boyfriend. As Zoe spoke, she carefully pulled on the rope dangling from the attic door in her ceiling. The mechanism was very stiff, and if it snapped back in place too hard, the door would be stuck forever. Or so the building inspector had told her when she'd been in escrow for her house. "Not that the sex was stupid," she continued. "It was okay. I want to say I was drunk, but I wasn't. I even knew better. And I do know better. I was weak. There, I've said it. I had stupid ex-boyfriend sex in a moment of weakness." The ladder lowered into place in the small hallway of her house. Zoe put her foot on the first step and then looked at Mason, her oversized marmalade cat. "Nothing?" she asked. "You don't want to offer any advice at all?" Mason blinked. "Is that disinterest or are you giving me a pass?" Mason yawned. "I can't decide which is worse," Zoe admitted. "The stupid sex, or the fact that you're the only one I have to talk to about it." She climbed the narrow, rickety steps up to the surprisingly spacious attic. So far, she hadn't put much up there, mostly because hauling anything large or heavy on those stairs was nearly impossible. But she had found a home for her luggage and the new seasonal flag collection she'd bought at a recent beach craft fair. Her mom had always loved celebrating every holiday and season. Now that Zoe had her own house, she wanted to follow suit. She turned on the light and ignored the innate creepiness of being in an attic. This one was open and didn't smell too musty. But hello, it was still an attic. She moved the 4-foot flagpole to the attic opening, then returned to pick out the spring flag she would hang. She held it up and smiled at the beautiful woven bouquet of brightly colored flowers. "Perfect." Something creaked. Zoe turned in time to see Mason heading up the stairs. No! The last thing she needed was to have her cat disappear into some dusty corner for several hours while she tried to coax him out. Mason gave her his best green-eyed, "Who, me?" stare before jumping into the attic. He was a big boy, 18 pounds of muscle, and okay, maybe too many cat treats. Regardless, when he bounced, the stairs bounced too. Then they rose with astonishing speed before snapping into place. The final thunk of the attic stairs coming to rest shook the house. Silence followed. Zoe and Mason stared at each other before the cat strolled off to begin exploring, his tail held high, as if everything was fine, but she knew better. "Don't close the attic door hard. It's warped from age and humidity and needs to be replaced. If you let it snap shut, it's going to get stuck." The inspector's words came back to her, words she'd duly noted but hadn't done anything about. She'd had her mind on things like painting and new window coverings. I mean, seriously, they were attic stairs. How much could they matter? Only they mattered now. A lot. Zoe let the seasonal flag slip from her fingers. She crossed to the attic door and gave a little push. Nothing happened. She pushed harder, with the same result. She was not a mechanical person. She could change a light bulb and tell her computer to update with the best of them, but anything more complicated was challenging. She understood the concept of the attic stairs. She pulled a rope and the trapdoor opened. Stairs unfolded. When she was done, she pushed the stairs back into their folded position and they gracefully closed. What she didn't know was how to make that happen from the inside of the attic rather than the hallway. If she stood on the stairs and they opened, she would find herself tumbling down to the hallway below. That was unlikely to have a happy ending. She knelt in front of the opening and put her hands on both sides of the stairs, then pushed down as hard as she could. There wasn't even a hint of movement. She was well and truly stuck. She shifted until she was sitting on the attic floor and tried to figure out what to do. Calling out for help was pretty useless. There was no one home, mostly because she lived alone. Sure, she had friends, but they wouldn't miss her for days. The same with her father. Her cell was downstairs, and flagging down a neighbor would be challenging, what with the attic not having any windows. She swallowed and told herself it wasn't getting any hotter up here, that she was fine. And yes, she could breathe. Everything was okay. Something moved in the corner and she jumped, then pressed her hand against her suddenly thundering heart. Mason appeared. Was it just her, or was he eyeing her in a somewhat predatory way? "You are so not eating my liver," she told him. He smiled. Zoe forced herself to her feet. If there was a problem, there was also a solution. She would find it. If worse came to worst, she would simply throw herself on the attic door and take her chances with the fall. Better that than dying a slow, painful death alone up here. As she prowled the large space, she tried to think positively. She would be fine. This would be a great anecdote for later. But her brain kept supplying her with awful stories she'd read about people dying and not being found until they were mummified, because no one noticed they were missing. Which could very well happen to her, she thought, horrified at the realization. She lived alone. She worked from home. Her best friend was obsessed with her 18-month-old son and rarely called. Zoe could very easily end up liverless and mummified. She'd seen the pictures in science class. Mummified was not a good look on anyone. 20 minutes later, she had collected her luggage, the flagpole, two old musty blankets, and, oddly enough, a metal bow rake. The latter items had been left by the house's previous owner. If James Bond could kill someone with a fountain pen, she could MacGyver her way out of the attic. She placed the bowl right by the opening and her smallest suitcase next to it. The blankets were being held in reserve in case she really did have to throw herself on the stairs and hope she didn't kill herself when she landed. She would wrap herself in them to help break the fall. But first, a more sensible approach. She stood with the rake head pressed flat against the opening. She pressed down as hard as she could. The door shifted slightly, then snapped closed. She rested for a second, then pressed down again, this time using her body weight for leverage. She felt the door give a hair, then half an inch, then a little more. She managed to kick the flagpole into the opening to hold it. She straightened and shook out her arms. If she made it out of here, she was going to have a serious talk with Mason, and maybe start working out, and get more friends, and one of those old people alert thingies. When her arms felt less shaky, she went back to work. This time she got the door open enough to slide the small suitcase in the resulting space. The pressure dented the plastic, but allowed her to widen the opening. Two suitcases, and much swearing later, the attic door dropped to the open position, and the stairs, oh, so gracefully unfurled. Mason trotted past her and made his way to the main floor, then looked up as if asking what was taking her so long. "We are so having a talk about your attitude," Zoe muttered as she followed him down the stairs. "And tonight, there's going to be wine." 4 days after the attic incident, as Zoe thought of it, she stopped by Let's Do Tea for Scones on her way to her friend Jen's place. One of the advantages of working from home was that her time was pretty much her own. If she wanted to get her work done at 2 in the morning, no one cared. The downside, of course, was the fact that no one would know if she was mummifying in her attic. No matter how many times she reminded herself that she'd figured out a way to escape and now was fine, she couldn't shake the feeling of having stared down her own mortality and blinked. Or maybe her general unease had nothing to do with attic near death. Maybe it was more about feeling so incredibly isolated. All her old work friends had either relocated with the company to San Jose or found other work. Her dad was a great guy and local, but still her dad. It wasn't as if they were going to go shopping together. She worked at home and rarely had a reason to leave. Somehow, in the past few months, she'd kind of lost the concept of having a life. Breaking up with Chad was a big part of that, she told herself as she walked to the bakery counter to choose her scones. Not that it hadn't been the right thing to do, but now she was left at loose ends. She picked out a dozen scones, buttermilk, blueberry, and white chocolate chip before returning to her car and driving the handful of blocks to Jen's house. The mid-March air was cool, the sky clear. The Pacific Ocean, less than a half mile away, kept the beach community of Mischief Bay regulated, temperature-wise. Even in winter, it rarely got below 60, although it could be damp. She turned onto Jen's street, then pulled into the circular drive. The big, one-level ranch-style house sprawled across an oversized lot. The landscaping was mature, the roof on the newer side. In the land of escalating home prices, especially in this neighborhood, Jen and her husband, Kirk, had hit the housing jackpot. Zoe wrinkled her nose as she remembered that good fortune had come at a terrible price. Almost 2 years ago, Jen's father had suddenly passed away. Jen's mother, Pam, had given the house to her daughter and moved into a condo. Zoe would guess, given the choice, Jen would rather be back in her small apartment and have her dad around. Zoe knew she would give anything to have her mother with her again. "That whole attic thing has pushed me into morbid land," she murmured as she got out of the car. "Time for a mood shift." She walked to the front door and knocked softly. A bright yellow hand-painted sign above the doorbell warned, "My baby is sleeping." A few seconds later, Jen Belden opened the door. "Zoe," she said, sounding surprised. "Was I expecting you?" Jen, a pretty brunette with hazel eyes, groaned. "It's Thursday. I'm sorry. I'm a horrible friend. Come in." Zoe hugged Jen, then held up the box. "I bring terrible food that neither of us should be eating, so that makes me a bad friend, too." "Thank God. Lately, all I want is carbs. The more, the better." Jen led the way into the big open kitchen. She put water in a kettle, then set it on the stove. After collecting a teapot from a cupboard, she scooped loose tea into a strainer. "The days go by so fast," she said. "I can't seem to keep track of where I am, time-wise. There are always 1,000 things to do." Jen wore a baggy t-shirt over black yoga pants. She had on white socks, but no shoes. There were dark shadows under her eyes, as if she hadn't been sleeping, and the extra weight she'd gained carrying her 18-month-old son, Jack, was firmly in place. "Kirk's so busy at work. I know he's happy, but his hours are erratic. And don't get me started on his partner." "Still making you nervous?" Zoe asked sympathetically. "Every single day. The man is a walking, breathing cowboy. He has no regard for the rules. I don't know why he hasn't been disciplined or fired." 6 months ago, Kirk had left the relative safety of the Mischief Bay Police Department for a detective position at the LAPD. His partner was a reckless old-timer named Lucas. Jen lived in fear that Lucas was going to lead Kirk into dangerous situations. Zoe put the scones on a plate and set them on the table. She collected butter from the refrigerator, along with milk for the tea. She glanced at her friend. "Should I ask about Jack?" Tears immediately filled Jen's eyes. Her friend looked away, then back at her. "He's the same. Bright, happy, loving. I just wish..." The kettle began to whistle. Jen turned and snapped off the heat, then poured the boiling water into the teapot. Zoe took her place at the table and held in a sigh. Jack was a sweet baby who had reached every milestone exactly when he was supposed to, rolling over, sitting up, crawling, reaching for objects. The only thing he hadn't done was talk. He rarely vocalized, instead getting his point across in other ways. Jen had grown increasingly worried over the past few months, convinced something was wrong. Zoe didn't have enough experience to offer an opinion, but as every specialist Jen had been to had said, Jack would talk when he was ready. She thought maybe her friend was making herself crazy over something that might not be a problem. Jen poured the tea, then brought the baby monitor from the counter to the table and took her seat. "I'm still doing a lot of home testing with Jack," she said. "He does so well on nearly everything. I think he's bright. He's not regressing. At least not that I can see. I have another specialist I'm going to take him to next week." She sighed and reached for a scone. "Maybe it's nutritional." She waved the scone. "I'd never let him have this. I'm so careful with his diet." She sighed heavily. "I just wish I could sleep. But it's hard. I worry.
Of course you do. You have a lot going on.
Tell me about it. I had to let the cleaning service go. They were using a spray cleaner. Can you believe it? I told them they could only use steam and those special cloths I bought. What if the fumes from the chemicals are affecting Jack's development? What if it's the paint on the walls or the varnish on the floors?
What if he's fine?
Zoe spoke without thinking, then wanted to call the words back. Jen's gaze turned accusing and her mouth pulled into a straight line. Now you sound like my mother, she snapped. Look, I know it's not a big deal to you, but Jack is my child, and I'm his only advocate, okay? I know there's something wrong. I just know it. If you had children of your own, you'd understand. Zoe had been looking forward to her chocolate chip scone. Now she found herself unable to take a bite.
I'm sorry, she said. I only meant to help.
You didn't. She waited, wondering if Jen was going to apologize for her snippy remarks. But her friend only continued to glare at her.
Then I should go, Zoe said quietly.
She rose and started for the door. Jen followed her. Before Zoe walked out of the house, Jen touched her arm.
Look, I'm sorry. I just don't want to hear that Jack's okay from one more person. He's not, and I seem to be the only one who sees that. I'm drowning, and no one sees it. Please understand.
I'm trying, Zoe told her. Do you want me to come back next week?
What?
Jen's eyes filled with tears again.
No, don't say that. You're my best friend. I need you. Please come back. We'll do better next time. It'll be great. Promise?
Zoe nodded slowly. The words were there, but they weren't best friends anymore. They hadn't been in a while.
I'll see you then,
she said, and made her way to her car. When she was driving away, she realized that she'd never had the chance to tell Jen about what had happened to her in the attic, or anything else that was going on. Everything was different now, she thought. There was no Chad. Jen was slipping away. Zoe felt as if she was living in total isolation. If she didn't want to die alone, then she was going to have to make some changes in her life. Step one, she told herself, find a handyman to fix her attic stairs. Step two, get her butt out of the house and make new friends. Jennifer Belden knew that every mother thought her child was special, but in her case, it was genuinely true. John Belden, who was named after his late grandfather and who went by Jack, was handsome, happy, and oh, so bright. At 18 months old, he could walk and run, albeit unsteadily. He could stack large blocks, understand words like up or down or hot. He could laugh, point to objects she named, recognize the sound of his father's car pulling in the drive, and kick a ball with surprising accuracy. He was careful with his grandmother's very odd and delicate little dog, and even washed his hands himself, sort of, before meals. What he didn't, couldn't, or wouldn't do was talk. Jen sat on the family room floor with Jack across from her. Classical music played in the background. The rug was organic cotton and plush enough to provide a little protection when there was a tumble. Sunlight streamed through steam-cleaned windows. As far as the eye could see, the nose could smell, and the lungs could breathe, there were no chemicals of any kind. She held up a simple drawing of a spider. Jack clapped and pointed. The second drawing had all the spider parts, but they were put together incorrectly, creating more of a random pattern than an insect. Jack frowned and shook his head, as if he knew something wasn't right. She showed the spider drawing a second time and got a happy grin. You are a smart boy, she said cheerfully. Yes, that's a spider. Good for you. Jack nodded, then patted his mouth with his palm. She immediately recognized the signal, then glanced at the clock on the wall. It was 11:30. Are you hungry? As she asked the question, her stomach growled. Me too. I'm going to make lunch. Want to watch? Jack laughed and crawled the short distance between them. Once he reached her, he stood and held out his arms for a hug. She pulled him close and let the warmth of his little body comfort her. He was such a good boy, she thought, her heart overflowing with gratitude.
Smart, loving, sweet. If only... She pushed that thought away. The day was going well. She would focus on that and deal with the rest of it later. She rose and together they headed for the kitchen. Jack made a beeline for the small activity table set up in the corner by the pantry. There were all kinds of things to keep him busy while she cooked. A giant pad of paper and chubby non-toxic crayons. A blue and green lunchbox that played music and talked about the various items he loaded in it. She'd wanted to put in a small play kitchen, but Kirk had objected. When she'd pointed out that it was perfectly fine for boys to cook, he'd insisted on equal time, with a play workbench, and even though their kitchen was large, it couldn't hold both toys and still leave room for her. She carefully pulled the gate closed behind her so Jack couldn't go exploring without her, then plugged her phone into the small speaker docking station. After starting Pandora, she scrolled to one of their favorite stations. "In the mood for disco?" she asked with a smile. Jack looked at her and grinned. The Bee Gees' "You Should Be Dancing" started. She moved her hips. Jack did the same, kind of. He was a little awkward, but still pretty coordinated for his age. She began stepping from side to side, moving backward toward the sink. Jack laughed and clapped his hands. She spun twice, and he did the same. 15 minutes later, they were sitting down to their meal. She'd pulled Jack's high chair close. Disco music still played from the overhead speakers. His lunch was a small portion of tender chicken and a cauliflower potato fritter modified from a recipe she'd found online. She used an air fryer to make sure it wasn't greasy, with eggs and a bit of organic cheddar acting as a binder. She made them smaller than the recipe called for, so they were the perfect size for him to pick up. While Jack was pretty good with a spoon, she found that the meal went better when he could simply pick up everything on his plate. She had leftover salmon from the night before and a couple of crackers. She probably should have made herself a salad, but it was so much effort. Kirk would tell her to buy one of those pre-made bags, which probably made sense, but seemed a little wasteful to her. "Today's Wednesday," she said between bites. "It's nice that it's so sunny outside. We can go for a walk later and see the ocean." Everything she'd read said to be sure to talk to Jack as if he were capable of understanding. Just because he wasn't talking didn't mean he wasn't hearing. She was careful to always use complete sentences and plenty of specific nouns. Lulu, her mom's pet, wasn't just a dog. She was a Chinese crested. Food was specific, too. Bread, apple, rice cereal. The same with his toys. Every second he was awake, she knew where he was and what he was doing. She was always looking for opportunities to stimulate his brain, to help him grow. She knew all the warning signs of autism, and except for his inability to speak, Jack didn't have any of them. But there was a reason he didn't talk, and a thousand things that could still go wrong. That reality kept her up at night. After lunch, Jack carefully carried his plate back to the kitchen. She took it from him and put it on the counter, next to hers. She drew the gate shut again and turned off the music, because a child had to get used to quiet as well. She plugged in her earbuds and, as she did every day after lunch, turned into the police scanner app. It was the usual barrage of chatter, two officers being sent to investigate possible domestic abuse, someone checking in with dispatch to see if they wanted breadsticks with marinara. She glanced at the counter to make sure she'd put all the food away. Seconds later, her entire body went cold. The words came too fast for her to follow what was happening, but enough of them got through. Two detectives, shooter, officer down. Kirk! Panic flooded her, making her heart race. She couldn't breathe, couldn't catch her breath. Even knowing she wasn't having a heart attack didn't stem the growing sense of dread. Her chest was tight, and even though she was inhaling, she couldn't seem to get air into her lungs.
"Crackers are a tasty snack,"
the singing voice from Jack's toy cut through the growing fog in her brain. She glanced at her son, who pushed the square plastic crackers into the lunchbox, then laughed. She hung on to the counter and told herself to stay calm. If Kirk was the injured officer, she would be getting a phone call. A squad car would show up to take her to wherever it was family went in times like this. In the meantime, she dialed Kirk's cell, but it went right to voicemail.
as it always did when he was working. She desperately wanted to turn on the TV, but couldn't. Jack couldn't be exposed to the news. It was too violent. She didn't know what memories he might retain. Besides, everything she'd read or heard said to limit television at his age. She carefully scraped the food into her composting bin, then put the plates in the dishwasher. She wiped down the counters, all the while listening to the scanner. There were no details, just more jumbled information. No mention of names. Just a repeat of what she'd heard before. When the kitchen was clean, she reluctantly took out her earpieces. She didn't want to wear them in front of Jack. He needed to know she was paying attention to him. She was still having trouble breathing and was racked by occasional tremors. Going to the beach was out of the question now. She had to stay home in case the worst had happened. Jen took Jack into the backyard. She kept the slider open so she could hear if someone came to the front door. She had her cell phone in her pocket. For an endless hour, she played with her son, all the while waiting anxiously for some bit of news from Kirk. About 1:45, they headed inside, where she gave Jack a light snack of pumpkin dip with a quarter of a sliced apple. When he was done with that, they went into his room to begin his afternoon pre-nap ritual. She pulled the curtains shut while he picked out which stuffed animal he wanted with him. Winnie the Pooh usually won, and today was no exception. She helped Jack take off his shoes, then got him into bed. She sat next to him and turned on the nightlight slash music box she played every afternoon. The familiar music made him yawn. One story later, he was already asleep. Jen turned on the baby monitor, then slowly backed out of the room. Once the door was closed, she ran into the family room and turned on the TV. All the local stations were back to their regular programming. She switched over to CNN, but Wolf Blitzer was talking about an uptick in the stock market. She raced to her desk and waited impatiently for her laptop to boot, then went to her local affiliate's website and scanned the articles. She found one on the shooting, but it hadn't been updated in 30 minutes. There was no news beyond a suspect shooting at two detectives. The suspect had been taken into custody. There was no information on a downed officer. Which meant what? No one had been shot? They didn't want to say anything until family had been notified? She tried Kirk's cell again and went right to voicemail. She told herself he was fine, that he would be home soon. She needed to get moving, to tackle all the chores that piled up during the day. Jack's nap was only about an hour. The quiet time was precious. Only, she couldn't seem to move, mostly because her chest hurt and she still wasn't breathing well. Panic loomed, threatening to take her over the edge. She needed her husband. She needed her son to start talking. She needed someone to keep the walls around her from closing in. Her eyes burned, but she didn't dare cry. If she started, she might not stop, and that would frighten Jack. She didn't want any of her craziness to rub off on him. She still remembered being little and having her mother always worry and how that had upset her. She forced herself to stand. She had to plan menus for the next few days, then create a grocery list. There was laundry, and the sheets needed to be changed. She would just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Kirk was fine. He had to be fine. If he wasn't? She sank back into her chair and wrapped her arms around her midsection. She was going to throw up, or maybe faint. She couldn't breathe, couldn't. Her phone chirped, notifying her of an incoming text message from Kirk. She straightened and grabbed her cell off the desk. Relief poured through her as she read, and she sucked a lungful of air. "Hey, babe, did you want me to pick up something at the grocery store? Sorry, but I can't remember what you told me this morning. Love you." Jen made a half-laugh, half-sob sound and typed back a response. Kirk was okay. Order was restored. She stood and ran through her mental to-do list. Sheets, grocery planning in the list, if she had time. Then 5 minutes online looking for information on someone who could tell her why her little boy refused to talk. Chapter 2.
"It's not gonna happen."
Pam Island allowed herself a slightly smug smile as she rolled her shoulders back to appear more in charge, because she knew she was right. Oh, please, Ron, you're doubting me? You know better. Ron, the blonde 30-something plant guy and part-time coach of the UCLA volleyball team, shook his head.
You can't grow bush monkey flower in a container. These guys like rocky soil, lots of sun, and excellent drainage.
All three conditions can be created in a container. I've done it before.
Not with bush monkey flower.
What was it about men? They always thought they knew better. One would think, after nearly 2 years of her buying plants, he swore wouldn't grow in containers on her condo deck and then making them flourish, he would be convinced. One might think that, but one would be wrong.
You said that about the hummingbird sage and Shaw's agave, she pointed out.
No way. I totally told you Shaw's agave would grow in a container.
The man was incredibly intense about his plans. Intense and wrong.
I'm going to buy the bush monkey flower, and there's nothing you can do to stop me.
You don't even have a plan, he complained. You buy your plants based on the names.
That was true. When my grandson asks me about my plants, I want to be able to say they all have funny names.
That's a ridiculous reason to buy a plant.
So says a man who doesn't have children. One day you'll understand.
Ron didn't look convinced. He collected the 3 1-gallon plants, shaking his head at the same time.
You're a stubborn woman.
You're actually not the first person to tell me that.
She handed over her credit card. You'll deliver these later?
I will.
The words were more growl than agreement. Poor guy, she thought. He didn't take defeat well. He would be even more crushed when she showed him pictures of the flourishing plants. After returning her credit card to her, he tore off the receipt for her to sign. Then he held out his hands, palms up. Of course. Because Pam and her regular purchases were not the real draw for Ron. Pam opened her large tote.
Come here, little girl.
A head popped out. Lulu, her Chinese crested, glanced around, spotted Ron, yelped with excitement, then scrambled toward him. Ron picked her up and cradled her against his broad chest. The tiny dog looked incredibly out of place against Ron's "How's your fern hangin'?" t-shirt. Lulu was slim, hairless, except for the white plumes that covered the top of her head, her lower legs and tail, and wearing a pink sundress. The latter as much to protect her delicate skin as to make a fashion statement. Ron held her gently, whispering into her ear and getting doggy kisses in return. It was an amazing thing, Pam thought. Lulu was a total guy magnet. Seriously, the more macho the guy, the more he was attracted to the tiny dog. Pam's friends teased her she should put that power to good use, which was not going to happen. She was old enough to be Ron's. She glanced at her plant guy. Okay, maybe not mother, but certainly his much older babysitter. Not that the age thing mattered. She wasn't interested in any man. She'd lost the great love of her life 2 years ago. While she would never forget John, the sharpest pain had faded, leaving wonderful memories. They were enough. Ron reluctantly handed Lulu back.
She's a sweet girl.
She is.
You're wrong about the bush monkey flower.
When I prove to you I'm right, I will mock you for your lack of faith. Ron flashed her a grin, one she was sure sent hundreds of co-eds swooning.
We'll see.
Pam put Lulu back in the tote, slung it over her shoulder, and headed out onto the sidewalk. It was mid-March. She was sure there was a massive snowstorm happening somewhere in the country, but here in Mischief Bay, it was sunny and a balmy 72. There were skateboarders practicing their moves in the park, people on bikes and mothers out with small children. For a second, she thought about calling her daughter and suggesting she and Jack join Lulu and herself for a quick lunch. An excellent idea in theory, if not in practice. Because Jen would obsess about Jack getting too much sun or not the right food. She would also fuss about the table being clean enough, and then point out that it was wrong for Pam to bring her dog into a restaurant. And while Lulu was technically not allowed, she stayed in her tote and never made a sound. which was more than could be said for a lot of the human patrons. The point being, Pam sighed. While she would very much like to spend an afternoon with her grandson, the same couldn't be said about her daughter. Oh, she loved Jen. She would die for Jen or donate an organ. She wished her only the best. But, and this was something Pam hadn't admitted to anyone but Lulu, since Jack had been born, Jen wasn't very much fun. She was obsessed with her child. Was he growing? Was he sitting up when he should? Did he maintain eye contact? Being around her was exhausting and stressful, and thinking that probably made her a bad person. She knew what it was to worry about kids. She'd been a bit of an obsessive mother herself, but nothing like this. She reached into her tote and patted Lulu. "What do you suggest?" she asked her little dog. "Should we live with our flaws and go get ice cream?" Lulu barked. Pam took that as a yes. She would, she promised herself, gird her loins and visit her daughter in the morning. But for this afternoon, she would enjoy the beach and the fun of repotting her bush monkey flowers. Later, there would be ice cream. Off to later switch down. Zoe wrinkled her nose. She wasn't sure where to place the blame. A faulty translation program or human error? Either way, the message was getting lost. She glanced at the second document open on her large computer screen and began to type. To turn off the unit, press down on the power switch. After 30 minutes in standby mode, it will shut off automatically. Because if you're stupid enough to walk away without turning off an incredibly hot iron, we will do our very best to keep you from burning down your house. Personally, I'm not sure you deserve that much consideration, but no one asked me. Zoe allowed herself a brief fantasy that she would simply hit the send button. If only. Then she carefully and responsibly deleted the last two sentences and moved on to the next section of the instruction manual. She translated more semi-English to the real thing. This week's work was small appliances. The week before had been some high-tech medical equipment. That had been more challenging. It wasn't so much that the original manuals weren't written in English. It was that they'd been written by people who spoke in code and abbreviations. Technicians and hospitals were busy with pressing problems. They didn't have time to figure out what they thought the instructions meant. They had to do their job and move on to the next patient. Zoe made that possible. She'd translated manuals from their original gibberish to something easily understood. She knew that for the most part, the average consumer never bothered cracking a manual. But if they happened to read one of hers, they would find easy-to-understand instructions written in a way that made sense. She reached the bottom of the section, then rose to stretch. Too much computer time made her back stiff and her legs ache. "Wasn't I supposed to be getting more exercise?" she asked out loud, then turned to Mason, who was asleep on the old club chair in the sunniest corner of her small home office. "Did you not want to talk about it now? Should I point out I'm the only person who feeds you, and I'm the only one who loves you? So if something happens to me, you're going to be swimming in regret." She waited, but Mason didn't even twitch an ear. Right before she reached down to scratch him under the chin, he gave her a little murr of greeting and began to purr. "Ha, I knew you were listening. And yes, I get how pathetic it is that we're having this conversation." Her phone rang. Saved by the ringtone, she thought, as she glanced at the screen, smiled, and pushed the talk button. "Hey, Dad."
"Why don't I ever see you? What are you hiding from me? Did you get a tattoo? Shave your head?"
She laughed. "Why does it have to be about my appearance? Is this a woman thing? Are you discriminating against my gender, assuming that we're all about how we look? Women have brains, Dad."
"Zoe, I beg you, no talk of female equality. It's barely 10 in the morning." Her father chuckled. "As for your brain, I suspect you have too much of one. I'm checking up on you because I'm your father. Things are good."
Zoe thought about the attic incident, but decided not to mention it to her dad. He would worry, and she didn't need one more thing in her life. Well, truthfully, she needed a lot more things in her life, but his worrying wasn't one of them. "I'm fine."
"What's going on?"
"Work."
"And when you're not working?"
Her father sighed.
Please don't say you're hanging out with Mason. He's a cat. He does nothing but sleep and eat.
Sometimes he poops.
Yes, and it's a moment to be treasured by all of us.
There was a pause.
Zoe, are you getting out at all? You're no longer going into an office, and now Chad is gone. I'm glad you finally dumped him, but you're young. You should be having fun.
Uh-oh. She could hear the worry building up ahead of steam. Dad, I'm great, she emphasized the last word. And busy. She desperately tried to think of something that would make her sound busy. Oh, you know what? I'm having a barbecue next Sunday. You should come. It will be fun.
A barbecue?
Yep. At, 4. You can bring a date, assuming she's age-appropriate.
Her father laughed. We have different definitions of that.
Yes, we do, and yours is icky.
I never dated anyone younger than you.
You don't get points for that. Most people would tell you dating someone younger than me shouldn't even be a consideration.
You know I gave up young women years ago. I'm not seeing anyone, but if I were, I promise she would be age appropriate.
Zoe sank onto the floor next to Mason's chair. Dad, you haven't had anyone in your life in a while. Why is that?
I want something more. I'll know when I find her. Until then, I'm happily single.
Zoe wondered when the change had occurred. If she had to guess, she would say it was when her mother had died. While her parents had been divorced for years, they'd always stayed friends. Her father had been nearly as devastated as Zoe by the loss.
You need to get back to work, young lady, he said. I'll see you next Sunday. Can I bring anything?
She smiled. The usual.
Tequila it is.
Jen heard the garage door open and jumped to her feet. Daddy's home! Jack's eyes widened and he clapped his hands together. For a brief, heart-stopping second, she thought he was going to say something. Anything would be great. She so wouldn't care if Dada was his first word. But he only laughed and got unsteadily to his feet before running toward the far end of the family room. Jen was feeling a little giddy herself, but her excitement was more about knowing that her husband had made it safely through another day. His working for the Mischief Bay Police Department hadn't bothered her very much. Nothing bad ever happened in the small, family-oriented beach community. But the LAPD was totally different. There were over 8 million people in the metro area, and some days Jen agonized that too many of them were after her husband. Kirk walked into the house. He and Jack rushed toward each other. She watched as Kirk scooped up his son and swung him around. Jack squealed and held out his arms and waved his hands. Then Kirk pulled him close and they hung on to each other. Seeing father and son together always filled her with love and gratitude. Jack took after his dad, both with red hair and blue eyes. Her two men, she thought happily. As long as Kirk kept coming home. He kissed Jack's forehead, then walked toward her.
How's my best girl?
He asked before kissing her on the mouth. Good. She leaned into him for their ritual greeting of a family hug. Jack grabbed her hair and pulled her close. For several heartbeats, she allowed herself to feel only the perfection of the moment. This was everything she wanted, she told herself. They were all going to be okay. Then Jack squirmed to be put down. Kirk stepped back and the spell was broken. He set his son down.
How was your day?
While there hadn't been anything scary on the police scanner in the past few days, she'd still had her share of worrying about Jack. Her panic attacks were getting more regular, at least one or two a day. But she didn't want to mention them to Kirk. He didn't need to be concerned about her, not when he could be shot at any second. Telling herself he was a detective and not a beat cop didn't help her relax. Good. Jack and I went to the park, and he met a little boy there. They played well together. Something that made her happy. She didn't want to put Jack into daycare, but she didn't have any friends with kids. She knew the importance of socialization for a child his age. She was either going to have to suck it up about daycare or get him in a playgroup. But that wasn't something she would worry about today. Kirk headed for his study, where Jen knew he would lock up his sidearm and badge in the small wall safe they'd had installed when Jack was born.
I invited Lucas over for dinner.
Kirk called from the other room. Jen glared in his general direction. No doubt her husband had deliberately waited until he was out of sight to share that nugget.
Tonight?
He returned, his smile winning.
Yes, for tonight. Is that okay?
Okay? No, it wasn't okay. It was never okay when Lucas came over. But it was so much worse when Kirk sprung it on her. She was a mess. She didn't have on makeup or nice clothes, and she honestly couldn't remember if she'd showered that morning. She'd planned on a simple, healthy dinner, neither of which her husband's partner would appreciate. But Lucas was Kirk's best hope at coming home alive every day. She drew in a breath and forced a smile.
It's fine, although I doubt he's going to want what I have ready for dinner.
He said he would bring steaks.
From where?
Kirk looked blank.
The store?
So, just regular beef from an unknown source. Not the grass-fed organic certified meat she bought at a specialty store 15 miles away.
Wonderful, she said between gritted teeth.
He moved close.
Honey, you don't always have to have a family tree to eat a hamburger.
There were 1,000 different responses to that condescending statement.
I want to give Jack the best start possible.
I know, and I appreciate all the work you do. But maybe it's okay to lighten up now and then.
Sure, because it was always about her having to change, not other people. Kirk would let Lucas do anything he wanted. Jen knew he respected his partner, but there were times when she wanted to scream. Of course, the need to scream wasn't limited to Lucas.
I need to go get changed, she said, then figure out some sides for the steaks.
You look fine. Lucas won't care.
She was sure that last part was true. After all, she was far too old to interest him. But that wasn't the point. I'll be right back. 15 minutes later, she'd changed into jeans and a pretty blouse. After applying makeup basics, she'd pulled her hair out of its ponytail and brushed it. She needed highlights and a decent cut, but neither was happening today. On her way back to the kitchen, she mentally reviewed the food in her refrigerator. She put away the free-range chicken she'd been marinating, then tested a couple of avocados for the salad. There was a bag of French fries in the freezer and organic frozen chicken fingers, because while Jack could eat ground meat, he wasn't ready for steak. Kirk had already started the barbecue and wiped down the patio table. She'd just collected plates to take outside when he stuck his head in.
Lucas is here.
Jen mentally braced herself for the chaos that was to follow. Lucas was a larger-than-life character who dominated every room he entered. Despite her misgivings about him, from all that she'd heard, he had an excellent reputation on the force. He was a decorated veteran officer. He was also a completely selfish, egotistical man who didn't give a damn about anyone but himself. And he was her husband's partner, so there was no escaping him. She walked out into the backyard. The gate was open, and Kirk had walked out to greet his buddy. The incongruity of her handsome husband holding his toddler son and the ridiculously expensive 2-seater convertible that pulled into their driveway was telling. Jen had no idea how Lucas could afford the Mercedes. It had to cost as much as he made in a year, maybe more. But she hadn't asked, mostly because she didn't want to know. She moved toward the gate. To do otherwise would signal her feelings, and she didn't want to make things awkward for Kirk. Lucas was around 50, slim and tan. His hair was white, his eyes a startling deep green, and his smile easy. She'd never seen him in anything but jeans, a long-sleeved shirt, and cowboy boots. When he was working, he threw on a sport coat. She supposed most people would say he was good-looking. She thought of him as more dissolute. He lived hard, drank often, and had a string of incredibly young women in his life. Jen disapproved of him on principle, and getting to know him hadn't changed her opinion at all.
Hey, Jen,
he called out to her. He nodded at Kirk and winked at Jack, who clapped happily. For reasons Jen couldn't begin to understand, her son adored Lucas.
I come bearing gifts.
Lucas walked around to the passenger side of his small car and pulled out a grocery bag, an Amazon box, and a 6-pack of beer.
Something for everyone,
he joked as he walked to the gate and handed her the packages. She stared at the Amazon box and told herself it couldn't be nearly as bad as she imagined, then hoped she wasn't lying. He turned back to Kirk. Jack laughed, then flung himself at Lucas, fearless at the mid-air transfer.
"How's my man?" Lucas asked, holding Jack comfortably. "High five."
He held up his hand. Jack smacked his palm against Lucas's, then laughed even more. They went into the backyard. Lucas put Jack down, and the toddler ran around, shrieking. Jen did her best not to roll her eyes. This always happened, Lucas overexcited the boy. Later, she would have trouble getting Jack to sleep. Lucas took the Amazon box and the beer from her, then winked. A gesture of friendship or mockery? With him, she was never sure. He crossed to the built-in outdoor kitchen, opened a drawer, and pulled out a bottle opener. After popping the top on two beers, he hesitated, then glanced at her.
"Did you?" he began.
"No, I'm fine." Like most pregnant women, Jen had completely given up alcohol, but even after Jack was born, she hadn't gone back. She was too afraid her son might need her. She had to be alert and vigilant at all times. Lucas stuck the rest of the six-pack in the mini-fridge, then drew a pocket knife out of his pocket. He slid the tape on the box and set it on the ground in front of Jack. Her son squatted down and peered inside. Slowly, his eyes widened and his mouth turned up in delight. He pulled out a blue and white... Jen squinted. What on earth?
That is a genuine B-Woofer guitar, Lucas told him.
He removed the packaging, then settled the strap on Jack's small shoulder. The guitar hung down to his thighs.
You hold it like this,
Lucas told him, placing his hands on the neck and body.
See these buttons? When you push them, they make music. They're called chords. I'm sure your mom will teach you all about them.
Jen listened in dismay as she heard a full chord being played by the guitar. Apparently, every button was a chord. They could be played individually or together. While that would be an excellent way to learn music, the noise potential was terrifying.
And over here, Lucas pointed, there are pre-programmed songs, a bunch of different ones. If you push the little dog button, he winked at Jen again, you get dog songs. Cool, huh?
Jack looked unsure as he pushed the yellow button with the note on it. Sure enough, a song began to play. His eyes lit up and he turned toward her, wanting to share the joy of the moment. Jen smiled even as she looked at her husband and murmured, I'm going to kill him.
It's a great toy.
You're not going to be stuck home with it. She glanced back at the guitar. Did he check out the age suggestions? That seems really advanced for Jack.
Kirk put his arm around her. Honey, let it go for now. Later you can check it for small parts. Lucas is a great guy and he adores Jack. That should be enough.
Why? Why should it be enough? Why shouldn't Kirk's partner have to abide by the rules when he was at their home? Why did Lucas always make her feel like the most boring, traditional person on the planet? He was the frat boy, party guy, and she was the house mother. It wasn't fair. She wanted to stomp her foot, but that wouldn't accomplish anything. Instead, she smiled tightly, murmured a quick, Thanks, Lucas, then escaped into the kitchen. The bag of groceries he'd brought contained three massive steaks, a large container of blue cheese potato salad, and, kind of surprising, two jars of organic toddler food, root vegetables with turkey and quinoa. Kirk walked into the kitchen. He took the jar from her.
See, he's not all bad. You like this brand.
Maybe. Lucas walked in with Jack on his hip. Jen was grateful that the guitar had been left outside. She would put it away and bring it out only when Jack was rested. Teaching him about music would be good, she thought reluctantly. She was sure she'd read somewhere that music appreciation helped with math skills.
Someone has a dirty diaper,
Lucas said, handing Jack to his father.
Uncle duty only goes so far.
Kirk laughed.
I'll take care of it.
He reached for his son and carried him out of the room. Jen found herself alone with Lucas and unsure what to say. Thank you for the steaks, she began, and the salad and baby food.
I hope it's the right one. I know you want him only eating good stuff, so I asked a lady at the grocery store.
Did you also get her number? The words popped out before she could stop them. Lucas leaned against the counter and raised an eyebrow.
She was married, Jen. I don't date married women. Plus, she was too old.
His mouth twitched.
Probably 30.
How depressing for you. She faced him. Why do they have to be so young?
They're uncomplicated.
Whatever do you talk about?
Who talks?
Her smile was involuntary. Fine. If he was going to sass her, she could sass right back. She folded her arms across her chest. Great. So there's 6 minutes filled. What do you do the rest of the time? He winked.
I share my life's wisdom.
You're full of crap.
Maybe, but I'm having a great time.
He lifted a shoulder.
One day they'll stop taking my calls, but until then, it's good to be me.
Don't you ever get lonely?
Nope. That would require an emotional depth I don't have.
He flashed her a winning smile.
Don't try to reform me. It's not going to happen. I like my life and don't see any reason to change.
Which was all fine and good, but she didn't like that he was so different from her husband. What if he tried to lead Kirk astray? What if Kirk was intrigued by all those young possibilities? She glanced toward the hallway, then back at Lucas. I don't understand why you have to date 20-year-olds. But that's not my business. What I need to know is that you'll take care of him if something bad happens. Lucas's smile faded.
You have my word, Jen.
Which could have reassured her, only she didn't know what his word was worth. Chapter 3 Mischief in Motion was a well-known Pilates studio in town. The storefront was light and bright and probably appealing to people who, you know, liked exercise. Zoe had done her best to avoid anything that would make her sweat, so she'd never ventured inside. Until today. Not only did she have to work on her muscle mass, as demonstrated by the attic incident, she wanted to see if Jen's mom was still a regular. She and Pam had always gotten along, and Pam kind of reminded her of her own mother. These days, a little maternal TLC seemed like a good thing. And if a little Jen-focused advice was shared as well, all the better. To be honest, Zoe had no idea what to do about her friend. They were drifting apart, and she didn't know how to make that stop. Wearing her newly purchased discount store Pilates workout gear, aka black leggings and an oversized t-shirt, she went inside to register for the class. There were 4 women there already, along with a perky redhead behind a small reception desk. Zoe had a brief impression of scary-looking equipment, too many mirrors, and very fit clients. She thought of her own jiggly thighs and told herself that everyone would be so focused on themselves, they wouldn't notice her at all. And if they did, they were probably too polite to say anything. Besides, she was here to get in shape, and everyone had to start somewhere, and... Zoe? Pam spotted her and crossed the room. What are you doing here?
I wanted to start working out some more than I am, and I'd heard you mention the class, so I thought I'd try it. Is that okay?
Pam smiled, then hugged her.
Of course it is. I haven't seen you in forever. How are you?
Good.
Zoe hugged her back, allowing herself a second to feel the mom goodness that flowed from Pam.
Come on, let's meet everyone.
Pam led her around the studio, introducing Zoe as my daughter's friend and mine too, which made Zoe feel good. She did her best to focus on names and faces rather than trim thighs and killer abs. She would get there, eventually. Nicole, the owner of the exercise studio, was an attractive blonde who couldn't be 30. Pam mentioned something about Nicole's son and new husband. Talk about having it all, Zoe thought, determined to be inspired rather than depressed by so much success in one fit package. The class started on time. By 3, Zoe knew that she was going to die, right there on the wooden-framed reformer. She would simply stop breathing or rip herself in two, by accident, of course. Nicole offered her a kind smile. It takes a little getting used to. Just do the best you can.
Zoe nodded because she was too out of breath to speak.
It wasn't that they were doing anything especially vigorous. Instead, it was the slow and controlled movements that left her gasping. She was expected to hold positions for counts of 10, then lower slowly, or stand on some stupid moving platform with straps whose only purpose seemed to be to kill her. 50 minutes later, she rolled off the reformer and onto the ground. Other people stood, and maybe she would too, one day. But for now, she had to wait for her muscles to stop shaking. Pam crouched next to her.
You okay?
No.
Pam laughed. I know it's hard at first. Everything is confusing. You might want to try a few private lessons first to get the basic movements down. The classes move at a pretty fast pace.
Uh-huh.
Wow, 2 syllables. Zoe was so proud. She sat up, then pushed to her feet. Her thighs shook, but she managed to stay standing. Pam's lips twitched.
It's okay, Zoe said, still breathing hard. You can mock me. I get it.
You'll do better next time. Pam put her arm around Zoe's shoulders. Do you have time for lunch? I'd love to get caught up.
Sure, that would be great.
Pam plucked at her fitted black tank top. We're not exactly dressed for a restaurant. Let's get takeout and go back to my place instead.
Perfect.
As they collected their bags, a little dog popped her head out of Pam's oversized tote.
Lulu.
Zoe dropped to her knees, then winced as her leg muscles complained. Ignoring them, she held out her hands and the adorable hairless dog jumped into her embrace.
Hey, you,
Zoe said, snuggling with the odd creature. Lulu was part canine, part fashionista, part alien, and all rock star. Today she had on a white lightweight sweater with tiny purple buttons down her back. Lulu gave her cheerful kisses, then settled in for a good cuddle.
You bring her to class?
Zoe asked. I take her everywhere. She's quiet and enjoys getting out. So, what are you in the mood for, lunch-wise? Pam's condo was big and bright, with a view of the Pacific Ocean. The building style was modern, which could have clashed with Pam's more traditional furniture, but the warm woods and comfortable fabrics blended nicely with the sharp edges and sleek design. Pam lifted Lulu out of her tote before washing her hands and setting the small dining table by the patio door. It's still a little cool to eat outside, the other woman said. We'll do that next time. Zoe liked the sound of that. The promise of another meal together. She washed her hands, then helped by putting out napkins and taking the takeout cartons from walks up out of the bags. I have iced tea, Pam said as she opened the refrigerator. Diet soda. Oh, and that organic juice Jen likes Jack to have.
Iced tea is fine. Thanks.
They sat across from each other. Lulu settled in her bed by the sofa. This is nice, Pam told her as she reached for her carton of honey spicy shrimp. I'm so glad you came to class today. She wrinkled her nose. You're going to be sore. Drink a lot of water and take ibuprofen. It will help.
I promise.
No way Zoe was going to forget that. She wanted to be able to move in the morning. She glanced around at the condo.
This place is really nice. Do you like living here?
I do. It took me a bit to settle in. It was an adjustment for both of us. She nodded at Lulu. John and I lived in our house for over 20 years. But this is better. Manageable. I like being close to everything. Plus, now that I'm traveling more with my friends, it's easier to leave a condo than a house.
I know Jen loves the house.
After Pam's husband had died, she'd moved into the condo and had given the large family home to Jen and Kirk. Zoe couldn't remember all the details, but she was pretty sure that Pam had bought the condo from a girlfriend who'd gotten married and moved into her new husband's place. She does, Pam said. I'm glad it stayed in the family. Zoe scooped chicken fried rice onto her plate.
The garden is so pretty. I'd like to do something like that at my place. Maybe a few raised beds? I'm not sure.
Jen mentioned you'd bought a house. Are you liking it?
I am. It's different. I'm responsible for everything, which is strange after always being a renter. But it's good.
except for the killer attic, she thought. Pam looked at her. How are things otherwise?
A simple question. The expected response was to say things were just dandy, perfect, happy, or, you know, fine, which was what Zoe planned to say. What came out instead was, everything is a mess.
Pam's expression turned sympathetic. Tell me.
I don't know. I'm so confused.
She put down her fork.
Chad and I broke up a couple of months ago. Or rather, I broke up with him. I feel good about the decision. It was the right thing to do.
But?
But it's hard. We were together nearly 5 years.
She had the wherewithal not to mention how it had started, or the problems they'd had, instead adding,
he's divorced with 2 kids. I suddenly realized I'd met them exactly twice. Twice!
He kept telling me that they needed to adjust, but I started to think he was really waiting for them to grow up and be on their own.
I'm sorry.
Me too. I feel like I've wasted so much of my life on him. I've made choices because of him. Some were good, but some I'm really questioning.
She stared at her plate for a second, then looked back at Pam. I bought my house thinking we would live in it together. I assumed that was where we were going. My house has 3 bedrooms.
3!
I bought bedrooms for kids I've met twice. And my job? I'm not sure that was right. Quitting teaching. I make more money now, but I don't love what I do. And I'm home alone, all the time.
She drew in a breath.
I had stupid breakup sex with Chad a few weeks ago, and when it was over, I felt sick to my stomach. I'm done with him, done. But I reacted out of loneliness. I want what everyone wants. Someone to love,